powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
We're going to go around the NFL here in a second, but Stacy, was it you or Howdy that was saying or suggested that Russell Wilson should have, or maybe should have, gotten more consideration for MVP a few years ago when he was doing the same sort of Lamar Jackson stuff, Lamar Jackson type stuff back then?
It was Howdy's opinion, and I stole it.
You stole it?
I stole it and pretended it was my own.
Okay, even though you'd credit him.
I did.
I took it, whatever. I think the reason for that, because we're talking about the years 2013, 14, 15, 16. As I'm looking at who actually earned MVP during those years, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Cam Newton, Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. I think the reason why is because those guys in those years were putting up such monster numbers that you wouldn't even consider a player with the style of a Lamar Jackson or a Russell Wilson for MVP. The year 2019 is unique, and that the best quarterbacks, the guys who are performing the best, happen to be playing in that style. It's just kind of an oddity. If it were those two guys in like 2015 Cam Newton, mm-hmm, or 2014 Aaron Rodgers, or 2013 Peyton Manning, now Peyton Manning would still be running away with it. Those other two guys, Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson, wouldn't even be in the conversation. You agree with that?
I do agree to a certain extent. I mean, with Russell, his numbers right now, you look at what they are, I mean, they're really good. And if he gets that same type of production, let's just say you double that, right? And obviously, that's not how this is going to work. But yeah, if you doubled that production, I mean, he's sitting around 42 touchdowns, and his touchdown-interception ratio is out of this world. He throws for over 4,000 yards. I mean, you're talking about a guy that – his numbers, as of right now, how they sit, are spectacular. Lamar Jackson has pretty close to the same numbers in terms of passing stats. Russell has the clear edge, but the other side that you have to factor in is Lamar Jackson's running ability, and I think that's really what people are so enamored with. They're not necessarily enamored with the passing of Lamar Jackson, but his running ability and his ability to be that dual threat in that Ravens offense has been virtually unstoppable, other than the first two, you know, a couple games earlier in the year.
He is coming along at the right time, though, because, like we've been alluding to, when Michael Vick was doing this in the 2000s, it was always, yeah, Michael Vick is great, but, you know, he's not a pocket passer. Or the conversation always got around to the things that he's not, in addition to the things that he is. Now, in 2019, it's almost like the world is ready for Lamar Jackson to do what he's doing, warts and all.
Well, I think in a really unfair way, and in a way with some questionable undertones, there was always this thing of quarterbacks that are more mobile, somehow you're like leaning on an advantage you won't have forever.
Yeah.
And that's not true, right? I mean, some guys can run all over the place, and that quickly comes to an end in the NFL. But then there are guys like Russell Wilson who had an ability to do that earlier in his career, but he could throw too, and he was smart. And I think that those are taken away from quarterbacks that are more mobile.
Because,
well, I think that there's a bit of racism to it.
I agree.
Or intentionally, I don't know. But I think that sometimes, like, you look at the quarterbacks that Russell Wilson was compared to earlier in his career.
Yeah.
They weren't actually similar quarterbacks. But it was just too often, it was like, oh, this quarterback, he's so athletic.
Sure.
He can beat you with his legs. And it's like, yeah, or he can also dissect a defense.
I remember Tavares Jackson. People used to call him a running quarterback. He wasn't a running quarterback for the same reason you're talking about. So that
that's part of it. I think that what I was saying before we came back is, I think that now quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield, this was like an entire conversation of the draft, but also now like a Deshaun Watson or a Lamar Jackson, when they are compared to a guy like Russell Wilson, there's a more open idea about what that kind of quarterback can be versus just saying, oh, he's only athletic. So it's almost like Russell Wilson helped further this case, but
never
didn't.
Got the credit for it himself. Yeah, exactly. Let's go around the NFL. All right, speaking of Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson, that game did not turn out to be the great game that we all thought it was going to be. I forget what the final score was, but Houston got absolutely pounded.
Oh, it wasn't even close, right? And I think that the Ravens showed that they are in a class above their own, right? They're in a class all on their own in terms of, I think that they're very much right at the top of the AFC and also in the NFC. They're one of the best teams in this league. Their defense is really starting to come together. Ironically, since they played the Seahawks, their defense has been significantly better. And then you look at an already successful offense with starts with Lamar Jackson, Mark Ingram, and the dynamic group of tight ends that they have. I mean, it's a very unique and special group that they put out there. And the reality is that Houston just isn't – they're not far along enough. They're not deep enough in terms of offense and defense to hang with a team like the Ravens.
Doesn't it always feel like that team is so incomplete? Like, whether it's because of injuries or because they haven't finished assembling what they need to. I mean,
right. There's always
year,
something.
Yeah, last year protecting Deshaun Watson was a major problem. It kind of continues to be. J.J. Watt got hurt the last few years, and now they're without Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, I feel like the thing with them, people are, it's almost like the Angels, where people are like, I'm not comparing Deshaun Watson to Mike Trout, but say you've got like one or two stars, and then you never really do enough to get them somewhere.
Yeah, you kind of end up wasting their careers. It's a shame in a way. I feel like they can still win there and will continue to, but they just feel incomplete, which is kind of a shame there.
Also, we didn't get to that awful non-call on the PI. I wanted to when Salk was in here because he just didn't care too much about it, in that he thinks that like if one call makes a difference, you need to play better. But it is bad because you start to wonder. I mean, the one in the NFC Championship was egregious, but what's egregious enough? Because to me, that was egregious.
It was pretty clear.
The DPI on Hopkins.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious, pretty clear that he tackled the guy. He tackled Hopkins. And I don't know what else you would overturn it for. And it's just funny, you know, we'll talk about this game as well. But the 49ers, that Sherm got this call and that Marlon Humphreys didn't, to me, they were just as egregious, if not more, the Humphreys to the Anthony Hopkins.
Well, to me, that's why you made the rule. So what now? You just decided not to enforce it.
It's sort of come to light, though, that's not why they made the rule, right?
Right. It was like a PR, like, no, we did it, we fixed it, it's totally fine.
Except we're not going to enforce it ever.
Yeah.
Correct.
All right.
When you've got one of the best receivers in DeAndre Hopkins and he can't get a call, it's so ridiculous.
How frustrated would you be if you were out there playing as a quarterback?
Unbelievably frustrated. I mean, that's one, you blow the call, and then you have a rule to fix those issues, and now they're not even being used. It's basically just a sham of a opportunity, sham of a rule that's just wasting you a timeout. It makes no sense. The NFL should just take it away at this point.
The other bad call was in the, and this wasn't a PI issue, this was a spot issue. Was in the
49ers.
Yeah, the 49er-Cardinal game when the 49ers are driving down the field. And I forget who the pass was to, but he caught it, and it looked like the ball never passed the first down marker, at least the first down marker that we have for TV, which is unofficial. So he goes down. They give him the first down, which they never should have, and that would have been a fourth down had they given him the right spot. And the 49ers ended up, because of that, giving him fresh set of downs, ended up going down, scoring, and winning the game.
That one, I'm with you, Tom. When I watched it, I thought, no, he's short of the sticks.
See, I thought he was short of the sticks, but I didn't think that that was like, oh, the officials stole this one from the Cardinals. It was a bad spot, but
see,
that's where I agree with Salk. Like, if you can't overcome that, sorry.
No, I agree with you. And then they lose it. They lose the game, you know, one or two plays later after they try and dial up a blitz and it doesn't get home. And now you have a clear mismatch opportunity, running back versus a defensive end. I mean, so, yeah, I agree with you. Arizona didn't do enough to win the game, and that one call wasn't the difference. But, man.
They've played them so close both times.
They have. They really have. And you just felt like the Cardinals had a real chance of winning that one. The last game that they played, the first game that they played, I mean, you know, San Francisco came back. They were down, then they came back and were in control of that game. Arizona starts rolling. in the second half and starts making a close one. Arizona, in the second game, they were in control. They were back and forth with San Francisco the entire day.
Yeah, were they up like 15 or 16 nothing, and then the 49ers caught them and went back and forth there.
Man.
By the way, Kyler Murray.
Been huge for the Seahawks. Yeah, he's
special. It would have been had they won. But Kyler Murray, man, he is a player. It almost doesn't even matter what kind of team he has around him, whether they're talented or not, because he's going to make it a long day for whatever defense he's going up against. It doesn't matter if it's San Francisco or Seattle or whoever, because he is coming into this league ready to play. Other than those first two games,
yeah.
I mean, you could tell he had the athleticism. But, I mean, he
made one throw. He made one throw in that game against San Francisco that just was, I mean, it was unbelievable. It was like, all right, hats off to you. You're definitely a dude in this league. Double coverage, put it in the right place, only where his guy could get it.
Yeah.
He's a special talent, and it'll be interesting to see how Arizona does in terms of building talent around him. That will be the biggest indicator of Kyler Murray's career, in my opinion.
I think a couple other small things. One other small thing to take away from the weekend. Now that we're getting toward the end of the season, you're kind of looking at the opponents that other people in your division will face too.
Don't say that.
That the Saints being one of those, that the 49ers have to play them, right? Still?
Mm-hmm.
They had, I think, three interceptions or three takeaways? How many takeaways for Winston? And that was without Lattimore. So I think that was a pretty impressive performance defensively for them. So that's when you're starting to kind of look and see what's going on with maybe not opponents you'll face, but who could help you down the stretch.
I really, watching this game against the Cardinals, just the San Francisco 49ers have so many injuries. I know that they overcame it and all that, but you're running against Packers, Ravens, Saints. Falcons are playing much better. Then you got Rams and Seahawks. This is a tough gauntlet, and I would not be surprised to see the San Francisco 49ers really struggle here in the next six games.
That'd be wild.
Speaking of injuries, the next opponent for the Seahawks, this Philadelphia Eagles team,
yeah,
guys that they're without right now, Jordan Howard, the running back, DeSean Jackson, wide receiver, Alshon Jeffrey, who's been kind of in and out, injured the whole year. That is three major injuries. I mean, that's like being without Lockett, Carson, and whoever else. So I'm not sure who's going to be available for this coming game because it's only Monday right now. But, man, if they're without those guys again, I don't think there's any way the Seahawks lose this game.
I mean, I think...
I'm not sure how good Carson Wentz is, to be honest with you. Right now, I'm really not sure. What's he done?
Yeah, I mean, again, they're without some big weapons. It's tough. You're playing at 10 a.m. on the road.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a big deal.
I mean,
deal.
I know it's not 10 a.m.
I really
there,
don't.
But...
I think the players, that's just made up for us.
Man.
I think it's nothing.
They've handled it extremely well this year. The one thing that does concern me about the Eagles is offensively they are really struggling. Carson Wentz is a quarterback. Although, Tom, you may not feel very high on, he's a guy that can change a game at any moment. If he gets hot, he can play like one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But you also have a defense for the Philadelphia Eagles that are playing really good football. And they are tough against the run. Their weakness is pass defense, but they fly around. They get after it. And if the Seahawks can control the game early, mm-hmm. I will feel very confident. If they can't, and they give the Eagles hope, and they give them life, it could turn into a all-out brawl in that game because their defense is for real.
An all-out brawl? That'd mm-hmm. be awesome.
Yep.
Now, actually, I don't want to see another all-out brawl. We got enough of that last week with the Browns.
With Myles Garrett, we got our fill.
I don't want to see any more helmets being swung around, do you?
Not ideal.
Well, no, I didn't say that, I don't think, but yeah, I'm right there with you.
I'll tell you one thing the Eagles do really, really well, traditionally. They go from Brent Celek to Zach Ertz to this other guy, Dallas. Is it Goddard?
Goddard.
I just added him in fantasy.
Did you?
Yeah.
Because of what he did last night?
No. Well, I just added him, I mean, like a couple weeks ago.
Okay. They know how to find them some tight ends here in Philadelphia. Woo. You know what I think we skipped over with that Baltimore game? Mark Ingram making a case for Lamar Jackson as the MVP.
MVP front runner. If anybody else got to say something different about that, then come see me. Yeah. I'm right here in B-more outside the bank. If you got an issue with that, come see me. I'm about that. Big trust. Woo woo. Lamar Jackson in the flesh. Yes, sir. Trust.
I'm with you.
Kyle, where's this same energy introducing us every day for the show? You know what I mean?
Stacey Ross, I'm about that action. Jake Heaps, take names, take notes.
Just random things. Tom Wassel, great guy. Great guy.
Tom Wassel, butters my bread.
I want to play that again. Hold on. Hold on.
The MVP front runner. If anybody else got to say something different about that, then come see me. I'm right here in Beemore outside the bank. If you got an issue with that, come see me. I'm about that. Big trust. Woo, woo. Lamar Jackson in the flesh. Yes, sir. Trust.
The best part of this also is not just Mark Ingram being a hype man, but the hype man for the hype man in the background. That's also amazing. Yep.
Initially, I thought that was like a reporter who had asked a question. And when
the reporter's like, yeah.
I'm like, what is this? It's good, man. I like it.
Hope the Seahawks are taking notice.
Of what?
Of what?
I don't know. Are you gonna?
What do you mean of what?
Are you gonna step it up? Like, what's? Is there gonna be a race every time now that Russell and Lamar come to the podium?
Are we not doing enough? I mean, Howdy's back here. He's just ragging on me that we, as a station, as a show, as a producer, not doing enough for Russell Wilson in this MVP case.
Wait, what?
Well, just like, oh, it's another show where it's like, oh, Lamar Jackson, yeah, he's the front runner. Moving on.
Wait, we didn't say he's the front runner.
What?
I think it's neck and neck, but I think that Russell Wilson has often been unfairly looked over for MVP. Tom's shaking his head.
I'm trying to contain my anger.
Okay.
I think when you look at it, Vegas, Vegas has now put Lamar Jackson ahead of Russell Wilson. I don't see it at this point in terms of, I know that it's very close, and I know that Lamar Jackson is having an incredible year, but you look at MVP and what that all entails in terms of not just stats and what you're doing, but how important you are to the team. Lamar Jackson's very important, but he's got a great all-around group. Seattle's defense just came to the party last week versus the 49ers.
Get Howdy on the microphone. Is he back there?
He stepped out.
He was scared.
But I did say, hey, you know, Tom has brought a take on this show before that has said, why do we care? Why does it matter?
For MVP?
Hold on a second. Why does it matter? B, how is that our responsibility? What does he mean, another show that won't pump up Russell Wilson? Like, it's our job? Is that in my job description?
Just for the sake of the conversation is what he's saying to me. It's like, oh, man, I'm surprised by these takes.
Let me tell you one thing I don't do on my
show.
Tell
it, Tom.
Okay? I don't have agendas.
Ain't got no soapbox. Well,
I don't have agendas. Who do I have an agenda for?
Maybe against Myles Garrett.
Oh, outside. Don't forget the Rams offense, Tom.
And
outside of how sexual the Rams offense is.
That's just a take.
It's
a take.
Is it a take or is it a passionate belief? Look, is it an ideology?
It's not a relevant take anymore because their offense is terrible, so it doesn't matter.
Do you still hold a small flame, though?
Yeah.
Of course. You never really let it go. You never forget.
You know why he wants us to build up Russell Wilson? So he'll have something to put in his promos. All right? That's self-motivated.
We all have our motivating factors, Tom.
So when you have...
Even Mark Ingram.
So when you saw Todd Gurley running loose last night, did it get you excited?
No.
It didn't?
They only scored 17 points.
That's true. Their offense still looked...
Game.
Brutal, but yeah.
Did have a great game.
It was
right.
Interesting to see Gurley come back to life a little bit, and if that's going to be sustainable, can he do that for these next six games, or is that just an aberration?
I don't know. I was watching Deion Sanders last night pretty late. By the way, they must pay him an ungodly sum of money to be doing that show at, 11 or 12 at night, reacting to what just happened 2 hours ago. Deion Sanders is up that late? Okay. But he was talking about how Todd Gurley, oh, yeah, he can run that way every game. I don't want to hear any of this stuff about Todd Gurley's hurt. Really? Well, why doesn't he?
That's the biggest mystery of all right now, right?
Like, well, because when he does, it's explosive.
It is. It's an offense division-changing performance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. All of a sudden, you're wondering if you moved on too quickly from talking about the Rams as an opponent in the threat.
Well, think about it. If Todd Gurley could run that way every single game and set up what the passing game, that changes this division entirely.
Yeah, you're right. But it also is one of those peculiar things where you don't know if Sean McVay and the Rams organization is protecting Todd Gurley in terms of, hey, he's got an injury, he's got a knee issue, and we're trying to spin the story by saying, hey, we're just, it's It's not load management, but we've got a rotation. We've got these different things going on.
That other guy, is it Malcolm Brown?
But yeah. What they end up doing is hurting themselves, because when Todd Gurley actually has a legit performance like this, everybody turns to and says, why haven't they been doing this sooner?
I know.
So do they have a reason or not?
I don't know. And you would think he would know that if that were the case. I heard this, we know it, he must.
Very irrational conspiracy theory that I don't believe at all. But it was the weirdest conspiracy theory I've heard, which is that Sean McVay, this was 2 or 3 weeks ago, so it doesn't hold now, but that Sean McVay was somehow holding back so that they would have all of these plays and a kind of offense that people hadn't seen, that he was holding back who the Rams really are as part of, like, prepping for the postseason. And I'm there's no way.
That sounds kind of amateurish, doesn't it?
That conspiracy theory?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, oh, we're going to hold back all this stuff.
Oh, for sure. I think it's just people searching for why there's a drop-off and trying to figure out what it is. And one of the theories that came out of it is, well, maybe it's intentional. Kind of like resting your starters in the preseason.
Right,
it's like,
right.
Well, I mean, this is still the regular season.
Yeah, still every game counts here.
Still, I mean, very important.
But that's my point, though, is if they're going to sit him out, they're doing themselves a disservice when Todd Gurley all of a sudden jumps out the table like this, because now fans and national media are pointing to the Sean McVay and the organization going, why haven't you done this sooner? And they might be protecting him.
You know what, though? Let's go back to Steven Strasburg. In 2012, they sat him down in, like, August or September in order to save his arm, and he didn't pitch in the playoffs, and they ended up losing in the playoffs as a result.
Right.
Now they're seeing the rewards of that because he can still pitch, A, and they went out there and they got to the World Series. Would you blame Sean McVay for protecting Todd Gurley's health if that really were the case?
Not at all, but okay. That's what I'm saying. I wish they would come out and say that. I wish they would say that, hey, you know, we are doing a load management program here. This is our intent. And now in that game, you can see the narrative would be for the Rams. Oh, well, the load management is working. Todd Gurley is getting stronger now that you're getting to the second half of the season. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The narrative on that is different because of the way that they've talked and managed his rotation, his whole injury situation. Yeah. With his knee.
All right, what's on tap for tonight?
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Brought to you by Tito's Premium Vodka. So, folks, what's on tap?
The Kansas City Chiefs at the L.A. Chargers, except they're not really at L.A. They're in Mexico City tonight, which should add an interesting element to it. I don't think I've ever watched a game that's taken place at, is it Estadio Mexico? Is that what they call it down
there?
Azteca. Estadio Azteca?
Yes.
The Stadium of Aztecs. All right. Well, that's what they're playing. So Joe Tess and Booger down there, right?
You looked at me like, did Booger tell you he's going down there? I'm not sure if he communicated that.
Yeah,
to
he did.
He did confirm. He confirmed to me.
He wanted me to let you know.
Oh, good. Good to know. Yeah. Okay.
But I'm sure he's reading all the notes that you wrote up on the Chargers.
For sure. Yes. I write them all the time.
So let's see. The Chargers are a couple games back in that division. We still have one thing I want to go over here with the Oakland Raiders. Maybe we can do that around the corner. But as of right now, the Chiefs and the Raiders are tied in that division at 6-4. So this game definitely looms large on Monday Night Football.
I know that the Chiefs are just a game or two back from Patrick Mahomes having a pretty serious injury, but the Chargers have had maybe the worst injury luck this year.
They definitely have. I mean, as a team, as a whole.
League-wide, it's been tough.
They've had a brutal injury history for their team this season. It's greatly impacted them. But that's where the Chargers are so interesting, because they have lost a lot of games and lost in poor fashion. Phillip Rivers hasn't looked good at times. And then they come out and they surprise you by beating the Packers, right? It's like, where did this come from? So it'll be still a very interesting matchup on Monday Night Football to see, are you going to get a legitimate Phillip Rivers? Are you going to get an offense that's performing on all cylinders?
Yeah. Are you going to get a Raiders version that goes out?
I don't know. It'll be interesting. But we'll see what ends up happening. We'll see Patrick Mahomes probably get himself back into the MVP conversation.
He better, because I got him in fantasy tonight.
Same.
All right. Howdy's back in the control room. I'm going to yell at him next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
All right, howdy. Why is it important that the local media, the local sports talk radio station, campaign for the quarterback to be MVP?
Tom.
What?
If people in our local media
who cover this guy and this team every single day don't look at him and understand how important and how valuable he is, then nobody will. And nobody should. We're the ones who get to see it the most. So if we believe that he's legitimately not the MVP, like he's, you know, just barely maybe a little bit better than Lamar Jackson or whatever, then I guess that's the truth. I was just surprised. I thought that there'd be a bunch of people jumping on today screaming about the injustice of Lamar Jackson being handed the MVP when Russell Wilson did this exact same thing in year 2 and 3 of his career and never got a single mention of that.
He did the exact same thing.
Howdy's trying to get us all fired up in here, and it's kind of working. But
well, hold on. And I'm not going to lie.
Well, wait a minute. But did you? I don't know if you were out of the room. What I told Jake was that in those days, in the first couple of years of his career, he was going up against Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Cam Newton when he had that unbelievable year. This year, Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson, for that matter, aren't going up against it. There's nobody else out there putting up those kind of numbers. So that's the only reason why the MVP discussion centers around those two in the first place. I don't think Russell was neglected back then.
Well, I think so much credit was given to the defense. I think that was a big part of in his early career. But when you get into like 2016, 17, 18, 2017 and 18, he set franchise records for touchdown passes. In 2016 or 17 that he led the team in rushing yards too? That's when it becomes a tougher conversation to justify him being passed over because you don't have the Legion of Boom as they were.
But he was
anymore.
Passed over by Patrick Mahomes and Matt Ryan when they scored like almost 600 points.
Doing traditional quarterback stuff,
okay.
Right now.
They also went to the Super Bowl.
Right. Right now, Russell Wilson is being one of the best, and I believe the best quarterback in the NFL by doing traditional NFL quarterback things.
Okay.
And it is the non-traditional stuff that Lamar Jackson's doing now that's getting him all the credit, whereas he got none of that when he was doing the exact same thing early in his career.
That's why.
So
I said
when
before,
is he going to get his due?
He won't. Like Stacy said before, that window, even though he was the first to do it, the first guy to run through that wall never gets the credit. The timing is just right for Lamar Jackson because in 2019, we're finally ready to accept that type of quarterback as a potential MVP. Whereas in 2004, with Vic, not going to happen.
Right. And I do, and Tom, I do agree with you that that is true. In 2019, Lamar Jackson, this is the perfect time for him to be accepted in the role and the impact that he has. But Russell Wilson paved the way for that moment, right? And that's what you're saying is because of his style, his play, the way that he approached the game, it wasn't recognized or respected as much as it should have been. But now you look back at it and say, yeah, This is exactly, you know, this is Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson. Those types of guys are where they are because of Russell Wilson paving the way and showing that you can be successful running and playing and being a playmaker and being able to eventually settle in and throw from the pocket. And now you're seeing a Russell Wilson here through 11 weeks of the season be the best quarterback in the league. He's been the best quarterback in the league in terms of statistical. He's been the best quarterback in the league in terms of carrying a team, in terms of putting the team on his back. To me, he's been the epitome of what an MVP is this season. Without question, you look at what Russell Wilson has done for his team and the success that they've had, you can point to number one, Russell Wilson, and it's not even close.
See, I think there are some other just dumb things that come into it. Like, I don't want to play this card because sometimes it's not true, but you wonder whether some of it is East Coast teams or just where the majority of those teams are kind of clustered around versus, you know, a team on the West Coast.
You mean that's why people think that Carson Wentz is so good when he's not?
Or just that you don't often, you think about just the exposure that players can get or those relationships that national media can make with them. Mm-hmm. You don't really get like Adam Schefter and Ian Rapoport or like, I don't know, more national reporters out here that much. I don't think that's the biggest reason by any
but
means.
You're but you're legitimately buying that East Coast bias is at play here.
I think that the Seahawks franchise, despite being the only other team behind New England to have consecutive winning seasons. Granted, there's a huge gap. It's an 11-year gap, but you have 7 seasons of consecutive wins, a consecutive winning season. Despite that, I don't think they're seen all the time by national media in that same category. So Is it because they're geographically so far removed and national reporters don't get out here? Is it because their most successful seasons have been more recent, so they aren't storied the way the Packers are?
And the one person that comes to mind is Marcellus Wiley. We heard that clip of him talking about Russell Wilson and did he look like an MVP versus the 49ers? No, that's not necessarily an MVP statistical moment, but it was a moment for him because Russell, all he does is win football games and will his team to win. But if you just watched him on that one night in primetime on a national stage, you wouldn't say that's my MVP. But all the rest of the games that you've watched Russell Wilson in the NFL, those are MVP moments. And so, yeah, national media, they look at games that are played in front of their eyes and recency bias and all that. That's why Lamar Jackson currently sits at number one. I do believe Russell will come back this next week against the Eagles and will change the narrative once again. And when you look at the two schedules between Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson, and they continue to play at a high level, Russell Wilson will win because he has a tougher schedule than Lamar Jackson when it's all said and done.
You just gave Howdy exactly what he was after in the first place.
Oh, did I? 1,000%.
Did you just trick me, Howdy?
Promo material.
Recorded all of that.
You've fallen right into my trap, Jacob.
And I sat there and I said I wasn't going to do
that. The puppeteer at work again.
Do you actually think it's the job of the local media to campaign?
No, I don't. But I do think that if it doesn't happen with local media, it's not going to happen. Because I do think East Coast bias is a real thing.
So do you think that you think the national media listens to us?
I think that enough noise gets made, somebody starts paying attention.
And
if the Seahawks teammates aren't going to make it and the local media is not going to make it, there will not be noise made and it will not be heard. And he's not going to get the same kind of attention and credit and focus on his game that Lamar Jackson gets.
Well, we also live in an interesting time for the media, too, because you look at what is one of the most prevalent things in terms of opinions and how they're formed? It's Twitter. And how many voters for MVP are on Twitter?
That's why we need to take over TikTok.
So I mean, I think you have a point here, Howdy, is that if the Seattle fans, if Seattle media, I guess, isn't making a big claim on Russell being an MVP, where else are they going to see that?
Nowhere. But here's the thing. And this is what Kyle, I think, was talking about. How much do we personally care? How much investment do we have about Russell winning the MVP? If he does win, we'll all be happy. But we'll be a lot happier if they win the Super Bowl. I mean, just him getting yet another trophy doesn't quite hit home in the same way that even a win would in a random week.
Yeah, but you say another trophy. What other trophies has he won?
I'll tell you around the corner. We're going to sum it up. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back!
Just so everybody knows, I absolutely adore Boy Howdy. Like, I admire
him. I have
him.
So many new opinions from him being in here talking with us.
Yeah, he would have made a great producer.
Wow, thank you.
What an honor.
Like, if your family were starving in the street, I'd give you money. I'd give you as much as I had.
Really. I would hope so.
Like a Greek philosopher back in the day, just paying me for my thoughts.
No, I just save you, not paying you for your thoughts. Those come free.
Tom, basically. You know, Howdy, you're so great. If you were falling off a cliff, I'd help pull you back.
Yeah, I'd yell for you. I hope you're okay. Hey, by the way, this whole thing with Russell Wilson in the national perception, I think that there is an element of the national media looking up in the Northwest and looking up at Russell and looking at Pete and viewing them as a couple of jokers.
What?
I think that people think that Pete Carroll and like the rah-rah, you know, cheerleader aspect, he's not the serious Bill Belichick who's, you know, focused on winning. And he's like, oh, Pete, yeah, everything, you know, win forever, all this. And Russell's kind of the same. Like, yeah, go Hawks. He's like a cheerleader version of Pete. I think the national media looks at them like, there's a, what's the word I want to use? I don't want to be mean, but.
Like they don't take it seriously?
No, like they take it seriously, but there are those two crazy guys up in the Northwest.
It's hokey. It's fake. It's not
real. Yeah, something like that.
Like, there's no way this can be real. Like, this is actually,
they think,
like,
it's not tough enough.
Yeah, and you know what? The loss in that Super Bowl doesn't help, given that it was, you know, approved at least by Pete. Russell threw
and
the ball.
And that it was against Belichick.
It was against the most serious, the guy that we thought was the best to begin with. See, if Pete wins that game, if he beats Belichick, it clears up the ghosts of the past from when Pete was the failed coach of the Patriots, and it kind of casts, it takes football and puts it in the new era. Now it's not Belichick and Brady anymore. It's Russell and Pete. They went out and beat him in the Super Bowl. But instead, they lose to them, and they lose in the worst way possible. I think that it's kind of like, you know what? Yeah, they had their thing going up in there in Seattle, but it's Russell and Pete. They're just kind of, you know, a couple of crazy guys.
And they're not really a serious contender every single year, right? I mean,
even though they are, but
you see last year, I mean, a lot of people were picking them to go 4-12.
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of faith that they have in Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, and John Schneider. I put John Schneider in that mix, and yet they go and prove everybody wrong in a turning year when they had so much turnover. They lose all their superstar talent on defense, and yet they make it work. They make it happen. And they're continuing to do that again this season. I mean, all the things that they've had to overcome, and I agree with you, Tom, that probably the national media looks at this group and says, they're not real. There's no real substance here. At some point, they're going to get knocked to reality.
They run Russell the ball. They're not a big passing thing. They don't have a pass rush anymore.
This offense doesn't go through Russell Wilson, and Russell's had to go through 11 weeks to change that narrative of absolute ridiculous play. They've had to overcome the fact that they were considered a team that wasn't real, and they beat the 49ers on Monday Night Football. That changes the narrative.
Well, think of the criticism of them heading into the season. I was just talking to Howdy about it, how one question was, who's Russell Wilson going to throw to? They have no weapons on offense. And all of a sudden it's, oh, well, they have Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, so you can't really say he has no weapons. Who thought DK Metcalf, I mean, he has had a phenomenal rookie season, but the narrative heading into the season was that he only had Tyler Lockett.
The national narrative. Like, the national narrative was DK Metcalf is a classic example of a bust, and he has been everything but that. And that's what I love about this team. I love about this culture, and I love about your head coach and quarterback and Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson is they overcome all that. They don't care. They just keep on winning, and they keep trying to, and they keep proving everybody wrong every single game. And eventually, there's going to be recognition for that. At least there should be. We've said that about Pete Carroll. We've said that about John Schneider. This is Russell Wilson's turn to win MVP and to change that narrative about him, who he is, and how much he means to this team. Because the narrative for forever has been they're a run first oriented offense. The offense doesn't go through him, and they play excellent defense up there.
Do they vote for MVP after the Super Bowl is over?
It's before that.
It's the night before the Super Bowl. They have the NFL awards show.
So they take it right. That's right. So they take into consideration the playoffs then, right?
Yeah, I don't think you get
a Super Bowl.
I think voting is due at the end of the regular season. Mm.
But at that point,
they don't announce it until the night before.
No quarterback on a losing team is going to be.
What do you mean?
So, like, no matter what, the MVP will be one of those teams.
Right, but what if Lamar Jackson lost in like the wild card round?
I don't think it matters.
But Russell got to the conference championship. I mean,
yeah, we could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Curtis is right.
I think Curtis is right too.
They take the vote after the season. So all that stuff that happens in the playoff doesn't really matter. But, I mean, that's where I say when you talk about this and just look at it objectively, Lamar Jackson continues to play great football. Russell Wilson continues to play. Just in terms of the way the schedule is set up and the way it's set up, Russell Wilson has a tougher road than Lamar Jackson, bigger games to play in these next six games. And if he continues to play at the level that he's been playing at, I think it's zero question that he wins the MVP. Lamar Jackson's having an unbelievable season, and it's crazy that you've got two legitimate MVP candidates. I know that there's been guys that have been in the hunt before, but to have two guys that are really playing at MVP level right now, I mean, it's pretty unique.
Curtis, was the last time they had a co-MVP, Steve McNair and Peyton Manning in 2003?
Yes.
Does anybody think that it's a possibility, given the similarity in styles, that both guys could win it?
I mean, maybe. Maybe we come back to this and me saying no is wrong, but no.
What would you rather? Russell doesn't win at all, or Russell wins co-MVP with Lamar Jackson?
I would say I would rather have him win co-MVP. I'd rather have him get some credit. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to split that trophy with some guy in Baltimore.
I don't want to split the trophy. I don't think it should be split. I mean, I don't think it should be split at all. I mean, but when you but if you're asking me, do you want recognition or not? I would take the recognition.
I don't know if I'd be doing that.
I feel like it goes against all of sports. Do you split the Lombardi Trophy?
Yeah.
Like, there's no participation trophies in competitive sports.
You look at this. With Lamar Jackson, he finishes up with in division, right? And those that's against the Steelers, that's against the Browns, and whoever else is in their division. It's not even worth talking about. But when you look at Russell Wilson and what his season finishes with, you got the 49ers, which could be a huge game, the Arizona Cardinals, which isn't a big game either division, but then you got Carolina, and you got the Rams, and the Vikings, and Eagles, and those are going to be marquee matchups and opportunities to prove his worth.
It does help that Lamar came up here and beat Russell. It helps Lamar.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, you can't, that's undeniable. He walked into Russell's building and beat him.
That's true.
He didn't really beat him, he beat the Seahawks defense.
But I mean, these next, you know, six games will also say a lot.
And we'll be talking about that more tomorrow. Thanks for the segue. 710 ESPN Seattle.